Hi, this is Grant Edwards from Liberty NZ. Now, today I'm going to have a look at my Facebook posts. I need you to go over to Rumble, Liberty NZ Rumble, and I've left a link on my Facebook page. I need 25 followers. That's all I need. Otherwise, I've got to pay $10 a month. I don't have $10 a month. It's all I need every cent, and I can't afford to. Well, I can, but I don't want to. I don't want to pay $10 a month just so that I can go live streaming. So what I do is I'm going to start doing a lot of well, hopefully, Lord willing, I'm going to do some podcasts that are live, and I'll use OBS, and I'll probably use Skype, and I'll be doing interviews with Skype, and then I'll be doing a live cast straight out. I'm hoping to go out on Podbean. But at the moment, I haven't been able to get that going. Don't know why I can't do that, but I'm able to go out on Twitch, YouTube, Facebook, those sorts of things. I think I'm going out on Twitter. To go out on Rumble, I need 25 subscribers. So if you could just help me out, just go to my Facebook page, Grant Edwards, and you'll see me there with the hat with the Russian flag under my chin, and because I like Vladimir Putin, and I love the Russian people. I think they're amazing. And so, if you go there, and it's the first post in past the one that I've got pinned, which is about the vaccine damage. And if you wouldn't mind just clicking on that link and going to my Rumble page and just following me, that's all. It doesn't cost you any money. Just follow me, and you don't have to look at the stuff that I do, but I'd really appreciate it. I need 25 followers as soon as possible. So if you could do that for me, go to my Facebook page and click on the link which takes you to Rumble, my Rumble page, Liberty NZ, and I need 25 followers so that I can get cranking with the live streams. All right, thanks very much. Now, over to my Facebook page, and here we are. Now, if you're wondering about the old couple in the background there with the masks on, it's a bit sad, isn't it? And so when I look at that, I just see so many. I look around New Zealand, and even on Friday, I was in Whangarei Township, and I saw a dear old couple hop out of their vehicle, and they're all masked up, well away from the shops even. They just got out of the car. One was sitting in the car with a mask on, the other one had just got out, and they're going to go off and do a bit of shopping, but they were way out, and they weren't even in the CBD. They were sort of like on the periphery of the CBD, probably going into, an agricultural store or something like that, or maybe just to buy some light fittings or something, I don't know. But they weren't really in an area where there's going to be a lot of people, but here they are. They're so fearful, this government. So silly old Cindy and Chris and Bloomfield, they had them just brainwash them day after day after day with this fake virus. They're going to catch this fake virus, and that's all it is. Only thing that's kept this fake virus alive is the PCR tests. And Kerry Mullis, the inventor of the PCR test, told us that you cannot tell whether someone's got a disease or not by giving them a PCR test.
Guys like Fauci get up there and start talking. He doesn't know anything really about anything. And I'd say that to his face. Nothing. The man thinks you can take a blood sample and stick it in an electron microscope, and if it's got a virus in there, you'll know it. He doesn't understand electron microscopy, and he doesn't understand medicine, and he should not be in a position like he's in. Most of those guys up there on the top are just total administrative people, and they don't know anything about what's going on the bottom. Okay, who do we trust? Fauci? Fauci doesn't know enough to, if Fauci wants to get on television with somebody who knows a little bit about this stuff and debate him, he could easily do it, because he's been asked. I mean, I've had a lot of people. President of the University of South Carolina asked Fauci if he'd come down there and debate me on the stage in front of the student body, because I wanted somebody who was from the other side to come down there and balance my, because I felt like, well, these guys can listen to me, but I need to have somebody else down here that's going to tell me the other side.
But
Fauci didn't want to do it. The general public doesn't understand the idea of a gold standard here. Neither do doctors, physicians. So, I mean, just pull the average physician away from his convention someplace in Cincinnati or something, and sit down and have dinner with him and talk to him about this kind of a situation and see how much he really knows. Like, does he know what a Western does? Does he know what a Western blot actually does? I mean, Does it? How is it different from this ELISA test? Does he understand how an ELISA test is operated? Does he understand anything about the statistics associated with the times when they've been tried? No, he doesn't. And he doesn't give a damn either. What he knows about is that when he has a patient, he charges them a certain amount of money for every treatment that he does, for every little prescription that he writes, and he likes to have a lot of patients. And the county health department also knows that due to the Ryan White Act, for every single person who is diagnosed as having AIDS in the county, $2,500 a year from the federal government. So the county health department is actually pressuring doctors by their little subtle ways. They're not coming over and beating them, but don't miss an AIDS case. You report it to us. If it's a positive test on the HIV, you report it to us because it's $2,500 in our pocket every year. I mean, it's a kind of a, I mean, there's plenty of reasons why they're doing it. But, you know, one of them is not that doctors are intelligent people in this particular case. I mean, the doctors have been dumb. The people that have taken the drug have been idiots also.
It's just, and that's, and you know, it's very interesting. I think it's very suspicious that Kerry Mellis died of a heart attack. He was only 74 and a fit and healthy man. Died of a heart attack. You know, it's very easy to induce a heart attack. In some countries, some agencies use a heart attack to get rid of people. In New Zealand, we tend to go for car accidents. That's how we do most of our killings here. Well, we don't. I don't. But our agencies do. The agencies, the world government agencies, they tend to kill people that they don't want with by car accidents. That's very interesting, isn't it? So, these poor old people wearing masks, it's just awful. Kerry Mellis died suddenly just 4 months before the COVID thing came out in March 2020. I think it was very suspicious that he died because he would have been one of the main people, because it was really the PCR test that kept the whole thing alive. I mean, the old people dying, you know, because they pushed them, they had a whole lot of people with flu or pneumonia or whatever, you know, bacterial infections. They didn't have COVID. They were just old people, and they pushed them all together into tight confines. They freaked them out. They weren't allowed to see their family. And, you know, when that happens, old people die. They fret and they die. And that's why they just wanted to up the number of deaths to make it look like COVID was really pumping. And then they used the PCR tests. And it was so really, it was all about, it was a PCR pandemic. It had nothing to do with so-called COVID. COVID doesn't even exist. So looking down my page, so when you go straight into my page, the first thing that you'll come up against is the breaking news, which is a whole heap of anchormen from and women from Australia talking about the deaths, the vaccine deaths.
A woman from New South Wales has died after taking the AstraZeneca vaccine.
An 18-year-old health worker has developed blood clots after getting her COVID vaccine.
An elderly woman has died in what's believed to be South Australia's first case of fatal blood clotting caused by the AstraZeneca COVID vaccine.
A Queensland man is in intensive care tonight suffering a blood clot after receiving his AstraZeneca vaccine. He's one of five similar cases around the country.
Six new cases of blood clots have been officially linked to the AstraZeneca vaccine.
Three more cases of blood clots have been linked to the AstraZeneca vaccine, including one case in an 80-year-old man.
53-year-old South Australian man is tonight gravely ill in intensive care after suffering a blood clot linked to the AstraZeneca vaccine.
In breaking news, a Central Coast woman has died after receiving a COVID vaccine.
The head of the Therapeutic Goods Administration is calling for calm following the deaths of two people in our state who received the COVID vaccine.
Concerns around the safety of the AstraZeneca vaccine have been realised here in Australia, with medical experts confirming the death of a Central Coast woman is likely linked to the jab.
A major medical investigation is underway tonight over whether a local man suffered blood clots as a result of getting the Pfizer vaccine.
Australians are being urged not to jump to conclusions over the death of a woman from blood clots after receiving the COVID vaccine. Tonight, 7 News can reveal another similar death is also being investigated.
The authorities in Norway are investigating the deaths of at least 33 elderly Norwegians who received Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine.
And the nation's medical regulator has revealed 7 new cases of blood clots linked to the AstraZeneca vaccine.
A Launceston family is pleading for help after their teenage daughter fell ill after receiving the Pfizer vaccine. Faith Ranson has been in and out of hospital and suffers almost daily tics after experiencing what a leading doctor admits was an adverse reaction to the vaccine.
It's estimated 79,000 people have suffered adverse reactions to vaccines.
It's just shocking, really. And I'm surprised that that hasn't had a Facebook little sticker over it, but so it's pinned to the front. And you know, I suppose they can't really, because it's just news reports, so I don't know how they would go about doing that anyway. So here we go. So the first one I've done is that I need 25 subscribers. Look at that, one person's seen it, so I am being shadow banned, there's no doubt about it. So anyway, so Rumble, Liberty NZ reporting inside globalist occupied New Zealand. I just need you to go to that link, and when you click on that link, you go straight to there, and all you've got to do is follow. Boom, hit follow. And then once you do that, then I will be, well, I might just follow me. There we go. How do I do that? So how do I do that? Oh, maybe I can't. Anyway, so we'll go back. Now, the next one is Professor Ed Dutton. Now, he's a very intelligent man. Now, about 2019, just after the Christchurch mosque false flag, where the world government used a hit team of at least 3, possibly up to 9 assassins to shoot up a whole lot of Muslims. It's very interesting that Jacinda Ardern sat on the committee that allowed Brendan Tarrant, to apply for his firearms license online. And of course they were told by the firearms people and the police, no, that's not a good idea. But she knew why she had to do that, and that is because they needed their men, their people, to come in and do the job, because once they got in, then they bought the weapons. They couldn't bring weapons in, so they had to be able to buy the weapons here. And of course Tarrant was the patsy. He was the only one that got caught, because they needed to have just the lone assassin, you see. So, but there was at least two others, and possibly up to 9 in total, some people are saying. So Professor Ed Dutton says that Jacinda Ardern is deeply mentally unstable and unfit to govern. Now, he said that just after the mosque shootings in 2019.
Well, I suppose I got thinking a lot about your Prime Minister, about Jacinda Ardern. And I was just, I mean, obviously it was appalling what happened in Christchurch, but it was also particularly, in a weird way, fascinating. I found her response very interesting. As far as I can see, she's to put it bluntly, she's a deeply mentally unstable woman. And I would have thought that she would be the worst possible person to be running a country in a time of crisis. And that's what she's doing. She's running a country in a time of crisis. But with Jacinda Ardern, I think it has been very clearly seen. I think that for the Prime Minister to break down, as she did a week after the events, and start crying in public, is a sign of something not being quite right. I think for her, for reasons I'll look at in a minute, for her to wear that headscarf, as she did, and encourage other people in official positions and whatever in New Zealand to do so, is not quite right. I think that many things about her are not quite right. I'm sure she's a very lovely person. I mean, she seems to be a very altruistic person. But there's a degree to which when a country has serious problems, altruism is not what you need. And this is perhaps one of the altruism is not what is certainly not what you need at a time of war. And in general, I would think it's not what you need at a time of crisis. Altruism has its place. It's a wonderful thing. But there's such a thing as being too altruistic. And that can cause, and when that's combined with being anxious, and having anxiety, being depressed, then you have serious problems. I mean, there are some great female leaders we've had. Okay, I mean, there's Boadicea, there's Mrs. Thatcher, but one of the things I give away my political sympathies there, perhaps. But one of the things that characterizes these female leaders is they tend to be quite masculine in their personality traits. This is why someone like Mrs. Thatcher was able to take Britain to war. Under previous administrations, when Jim Callaghan was in charge in the 70s, the Argentinians invaded an island that was near the Falklands, and nothing was done about it. It was just hushed up. Whereas Mrs. Thatcher wasn't taking this nonsense, because Mrs. Thatcher was very atypical for a woman. And that's one of the reasons that she ascended to the position that she did. And she had more balls than most of the men, I think. Whereas it strikes me that Jacinda Ardern is very typical for a woman. You're in this unlikely. Women are higher in conscientiousness than men, which means that there's a degree to which they have higher sort of impulse control. That's why women will do well in the education system and, you know, get into university and that kind of thing. They work harder than men do. They are higher in what's called agreeableness than men. They're higher in altruism and empathy. They feel empathy for other people more strongly than do men. And that has its place, of course. That can be a very good thing. But in certain situations, I'm afraid that can be a bad thing. But also the other thing that females are higher in than men is what's called neuroticism, i.e. mental instability, and in particular anxiety, worrying about things, worrying about the future. And it suggests this was useful in terms of mothering and in terms of taking care of children and so on. That's why it's been selected for in females. Now, this has, and what it seems to me that she's done is she's managed to ascend to this position of being in charge of New Zealand, at least de jure, and inculcate an entire nation, or parts of an entire nation anyway, with these feelings. We can look at the theory behind later, but I mean, I've been one of the things that particularly fascinated me about her, and I was very surprised it was never discussed in, maybe it was discussed in the media in New Zealand, but it wasn't discussed in Britain or I read the British newspapers, was that she was Mormon. And her background is Mormon. My original degree was in theology and religious studies, and my supervisor was the world expert on Mormonism, and I learned a great deal about Mormonism. I know many, many Mormons personally, and they're very nice people, in my experience. But this is a very strict, countercultural, separate religion. And if you are a Mormon, and in particular a Mormon that has what they call the degree of glory, which she does, i.e. a practicing Mormon, a tithing Mormon, a Mormon that is married in the temple if they get married, this is a huge sense of who you are. This is central to your sense of self. All the rituals they have to go through, they even wear special undergarments and so on. After a certain age, they don't drink coffee, they don't drink alcohol. It's entirely countercultural. And to give up on that, To abandon the celestial heaven, as it's known, the heaven that only Mormons go to, in favour of, well, she's saying she's agnostic these days, so she doesn't believe in God, so she wouldn't even go to the terrestrial or celestial heaven, she'd go to the outer darkness, is a big thing. And people that undergo fundamental changes in identity like that tend to be mentally unstable. And this was something which William James, the American philosopher and psychologist, did a great deal of research into. It's called the religion of the sick soul. So you get people whose identity slowly changes throughout the lifespan, and you get those who undergo a central change, as she did, i.e. she left the church. And this is a sign, you don't even need to speculate on it. She's on record. So there was an interview in The Guardian, in the newspaper, it's called I've Got What It Takes, on September the 15th, 2017, and she said she had a concern that her anxiety would preclude her from the top job. The condition of her anxiety had, in her words, ballooned during her time as Deputy Prime Minister. So she's openly saying that she suffers from anxiety. She said in the interview, when you're a little bit of an anxious person, you constantly worry about things. There comes a point where certain jobs are just really bad for you. She said in the New Zealand website called The News Hub that there have been lots of rumours about her health, and there have been people saying that she had spent time in a psychiatric hospital, and there were apparently members of parliament who off the record had said this. And she sort of joked it off and said, oh, I had tonsillitis. And it was suggested, oh, well, you know, release your medical records then. And of course, she didn't do so. There are many other remarks that I've noted that she's made about this. She's this thing about how she won't say the name of this, what's his name, Brendan Tarrant or something, that's the shooter in Christchurch. I watched the video on the day, and I think there was a degree to which it was silly not to, because there were newspaper articles out saying, "Oh, this person is missing. Have you seen him? He's missing." And I watched that person be shot. So I knew for a fact that person was unfortunately dead. I mean, why wouldn't you watch the video if you're trying to work out where people are? That's absolutely insane. But I mean, the thing, she made a remark about how she felt her words were at the, I forget where I've written this down, but I've got it here somewhere, at the precipice. She feels often she's at the precipice, which you know, implies sort of falling into something. It implies you know, she has a severe problem with mental illness, with anxiety. Now, there are many things that people that suffer from anxiety and depression can be good at. One of them is the arts. Being highly anxious, because you see the world in this unusual way, and you need to construct a sense of certainty, and you need to express how you feel, or you kind of go mad. And so it correlates with being good at the arts. But one thing, there was research by a guy called Post about 25 years ago, and he looked at the correlates of these conditions and being successful in a particular area. And one of the things that's quite rare for them to be good at, to be high in, is anxiety. It's depression, perhaps slightly different thing, but anxiety. She's open about this being high in anxiety. I'm trying to find the quote about... I'm sorry, I had it noted down here about the precipice, but anyway. So it's very interesting that someone who has this level of anxiety has got this far and is to the point of running a country. And it seems to me that, you know, everything, the period of fervour, the conversion, that correlates with mental instability, because all the evidence indicates that people that change their identity tends to be mentally unstable people that do that. People that leave religions that they're brought up in, that correlates with low mental stability. There was a study called The Relationship Between Fertility and Distress. And it was a study, and it found that an inability to get pregnant is associated with anxiety. Not it causes anxiety, but also it's caused by anxiety. Jacinda Ardern had problems getting pregnant, and they tried, and then eventually they had to use IVF or some kind of method, and didn't work.
Yeah, incidentally, they managed to get pregnant just before the election was announced. And she refused to tell the public about it because they did private polls saying the public wouldn't like it to have somebody who's pregnant running the country, because they'd think, you know, maybe you should be taking time off to take care of your kid and that sort of stuff and not be a prime minister. So it would have affected the vote.
Quite right, too. They should. That's exactly what they should think. And people have been inculcated with this idea that to even think like that is sexist or whatever, you know. But that's exactly what any sensible person would think. So the fact you have problems getting pregnant is associated with anxiety. The fact that you can't say the name of this fellow, Brendan Tarrant, could be interpreted as a sign of obsessive compulsive disorder, which is associated with anxiety. I think she's underweight. She looks to me to be gaunt and sort of underweight, particularly considering that she's only relatively recently, in the last year and a half, had a child, which is consistent with anxiety. It would be amazing, really, if she wasn't suffering, if someone with a history of mental instability like that wasn't suffering from something like postnatal depression. I mean, it would be, you know, odd if she wasn't. And indeed, that's one of the reasons why perhaps you might expect people to be concerned about a woman who's just had a child being prime minister, because postnatal depression is very real. It's a very real and very unpleasant thing. A person is in no condition to be able to be working, let alone running an important Western country with postnatal depression. And we are a wealthy Western country, whatever, a small Western country, but, you know, significant. So I would be amazed if she didn't. In addition, I understand there was an article in The Guardian called something like Jacinda Ardern, Having a Baby Changes the Tone a Bit, 10th of August 2018, in which she says she's breastfeeding. Now, lactation has certain effects on personality. There's good research into this. It makes females less suspicious, and it makes them higher on what's called socialization. And socialization is basically empathy. It makes you want to be cohesive. It makes you want to ensure that everyone gets on. It basically makes you more loving and kind. And this is more empathetic. And this is great, of course, if you've got a baby, because that's the one thing you need to be. If the baby's crying, you've got to attend to it straight away. You can't be angry with it. Women that were angry in prehistory when their babies woke up in the middle of the night would have been selected out. And that's probably one of the reasons why there's this relationship. Breastfeeding makes women, as it were, more womanlike, more agreeable, more inclined to see these behavior patterns which we've seen, which is this degree of empathy that's so strong that she's breaking down and crying and empathizing with the Muslim community, despite the fact that we have seen what the equivalents of Tarrant, who are Muslim, have done in such places as Paris or you know, whatever. The wearing the headscarf I found particularly fascinating, but it makes them less suspicious. It makes them more altruistic. And she is altruistic. I mean, she did, when she was in America, she worked in a New York soup kitchen, you know, this kind of thing. And one of the things that I also wondered about was the way that she's kind of almost identified with Islam. She must be so conflicted. She's been brought up by this, you know, this guy, what's his name? But he's a commissioner or something, relatively eminent father.
Ross Ardern, her father. He was a police officer for 40 years, and he was appointed the High Commissioner of Niue, which is a small Pacific Island nation.
Okay, so he's Mormon, and they often do have they often do reach high socioeconomic status, Mormons. But she there must be, from research I did when I did my doctorate, it was on fundamentalist Christianity, and then subsequent to that, I've looked at Mormonism, and those that leave, the sense of conflict they feel is terrible, because they are desperate to be accepted by their community. By their community that they've been brought up in and they've been inculcated with and they love and whatever, but if they leave it, they're literally saying to these people that you know I'd rather go to hell than follow the rules of the community. I mean, it's a very, very significant thing to break with it. So she must be so conflicted in her mind. She must have, not only is she highly anxious, that's quite clear, but she has this, I would think, this problem, this unresolved issue. I mean, she's only 30, what is she, 38? I think I'm right in saying she was born in something like July 1980, so let's say she's 38. So I would think that it's quite interesting that she probably identifies Muslims as this oppressed community that she has to kind of mother. And you can see how she'd identify with them. I mean, she's been brought up in a countercultural, extremely religious, extremely conservative religion, which until relatively recently, until what, 1880 or something, was polygamous, and which is extremely patriarchal and, you know, controls women in all kinds of ways. And there she is, identifying with this highly conservative, highly patriarchal religion, which is polygamous. So family is absolutely central to Mormonism. It's absolutely central to everything they do. So it's very useful if you're into genealogy and tracing your family tree, of course, because then you can go online. There's this website, and if people are into that. So she's I think that this is relevant, this conflict, and what you have. And also the other thing is that, well, there is some evidence that you shouldn't take antidepressants when you're breastfeeding. There's some evidence that certain antidepressants will cause problems for the child. Though there is counter evidence to that. But if one was of a particularly anxious nature, and I know of cases of this, then women will often stop taking antidepressants while they're breastfeeding. And just A, because they're told they should breastfeed. It's terrible to not breastfeed these days. It's this very strong culture that you should breastfeed, which didn't used to be the case 50 years ago. And B, that they're so overly cautious that they don't want to risk anything, so they stop taking the antidepressants, even though there's evidence that there's only some antidepressants, like venlafaxine is one, which have been shown to have only a modest negative impact on the baby. So perhaps she's not taking antidepressants, but everything about it seems to me like a mental breakdown.
He also comes up with a very interesting idea that if you want to have a successful marriage, Ed Dutton says, you need to go and join a genealogy site, or if you're friendly with a friendly find a friendly Mormon, you know, Church of Latter-day Saints, and ask them to look up your ancestry. And what you're looking for yourself or for your children or whoever you want to find a spouse for, is a third or a fourth cousin. And Ed Dutton, if you go to Ed Dutton's site on YouTube, he talks about this incredible a bit of research that he's done, and others have done as well, that if you marry your third or fourth cousin, it's more than just a marriage. You know, you see yourself in that person because he or she looks a little bit like you, because they are family after all, third cousin and fourth cousin. And those marriages last longest. They last, basically, because it's not just a wife, a woman that you've met and you've decided to have children with. You are family before you even meet them. And there's nothing incestuous about it. Third or fourth cousin is absolutely fine. Even a second cousin is fine. But I think a third or a fourth cousin, I don't even know who my third and fourth cousins are, so you can count me out, but I'm too old for that anyway. But that's what you need to be looking for, boys and girls, a third or fourth cousin to have a happy marriage. And there'll be hundreds of them. There'll be hundreds of third or fourth cousins. So you need to get together and have a family reunion. So that's Ed Dutton. The next one is, I've said here, in her resignation speech, Cindy, that's the Prime Minister, former, called on Labour ministers to consider which reforms should be prioritised. And I'm thinking, well, why do we need Labour to reform anything? The people don't want your globalist reformation. And we don't want you, Chris, we don't want you reforming us anymore. We've had enough. We just want you to take your clown party and go. And we believe that you should be banned from doing any further damage to our constitutional monarchy, because that's what New Zealand is. And the Governor General needs to be petitioned, and she needs to dissolve the Parliament and call for new elections as soon as possible. So that's what I think, and that was one of my posts yesterday, fairly late. And then, of course, we had this brilliant piece of reporting at Davos from Rebel Media, asking brilliant questions. There was a whole team of them, and they had that silly giggling Greta who had no lines to read, and all she could do was just giggle. She couldn't answer any serious questions, and then when she did answer them, she told lies. She said she owned 100 jets, and you know, we know that's just nonsense, but she had no answers for the you know, there she was saying, how dare you? How dare you do this, you horrible adults, with your global warming? And then she didn't speak so posh as that. But that's a brilliant video. You want to watch that. How dare you? This is the one interview that had more unscripted questions than Greta Thunberg ever faced in her entire life.
Greta, would you say you're a child actor? Are you a child actor or an expert? How would you describe yourself? Ezra Levant here for Rebel News. I'm standing outside the CNBC studio, the same one where the vice president threatened to clock our friend Avi Yamini. Of course, it's where all the VVIPs pop by to give their propaganda message, dutifully transcribed by the media party here.
How dare you?
It is the most important person in the world, according to the World Economic Forum. It is young Greta Thunberg. So we'll see if we can catch a minute of the young lady's time. Greta, how many times did you rehearse your arrest at the German coal mine? How many times did you rehearse it? Because it looks staged. Is it true? Okay. How many times did you rehearse your arrest, Greta? How many times did you film your arrest, and why was it staged that way?
Greta, considering you've not spent much time in school, how do you know so much about climate change?
Greta, maybe you want to talk to a real journalist. What did you talk to you here in Davos? Was it successful?
Greta, as a real journalist, is climate change as real as your arrest?
Greta, how far are you willing to go? You're willing to break the law. Will you renounce violence? Will you renounce violence, Greta? Or do you support Antifa? You've worn an Antifa shirt before. Are you in favor of Antifa?
Greta, how did you get here today? What was your climate footprint in traveling here?
What's your plan while you're here, Brenda?
Vibe.
What? Will we have a Fridays for Future demo tomorrow here?
Greta, how do you feel about discussing climate change with the delegates here when nearly all of them take private jets? Do you think at least the fact these delegates take private jets is a bad thing against, you know, what you believe in? All of this could be done via Zoom, so surely you should be encouraging all the delegates here, especially the likes of US Special Envoy John Kerry for Special Envoy for Climate Change, surely you should be saying to these people, you should be doing this via Zoom with a much smaller carbon footprint, surely? Greta, avoid my questions if climate change is a con.
Greta, what do you think about this?
Well, I think that says enough.
Greta, energy prices in Europe have never been higher. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? Are you happy that natural gas is so expensive so people can't afford it, or do you think that's bad?
Greta, it's getting quite cold in Davos. When can I expect some global warming?
Greta, would you say you're a child actor? Are you a child actor or an expert? How would you describe yourself?
Greta, are there any climate actions planned whilst you're here with all the other activists?
I'm sure people are planning things.
Greta, are you used to gentler questions, or do you ever talk to people who disagree with you? Greta, who was filming your arrest in Germany? Because it looked like you did that in several takes, didn't you? You were posing with the police. He's answering for you. He said you had an agency.
I wish I had one. It would be much simpler then.
Well, who was filming you then?
I don't know media.
You don't know who was filming you in Germany? He said he knows. He says it was an agency.
News agency, you idiot.
Exactly.
Do you normally have reporters defending you?
Yeah. It's very likely that the German police and RWE, a fossil fuel company, would stage an arrest.
How many times were you arrested? Because you posed for several times, didn't you?
Sure.
What is your main message to the people who are at the World Economic Forum? What message do you want to portray whilst you're here?
Well, of course, it depends on who you are. Some people are more responsible for this crisis than others, certainly. Careful, because here there are cars.
How come you never protest Saudi Arabia or Russia? You only protest Western energy. Why have you never criticized Vladimir Putin or OPEC?
Yeah, I've never done that. Never, ever.
Well, will you do so now? Will you condemn OPEC energy?
Greta, can you condemn every single delegate that's come here on a private jet? Surely that's something you should condemn.
You can do it too.
I could do it, but you're the one who has such a strong stance against climate change. And, you know, if it's true, I commend your efforts, but could you condemn them taking private jets to these meetings?
Why won't you condemn private jets? Have you ever been on a private jet even once?
I own 100 private jets.
Okay, so there's Ed Dutton, there's Cindy, you know, wanting to reform everything. And then you've got Rebel Media. What a great job you did. Now, here's another thing, too. The government have a tool that they can enter Facebook at any time, and they can make changes to stop New Zealanders seeing certain websites and stop us sharing certain things that they know are very powerful and that work against their propaganda arm. So here's one where I wasn't able to send naturalnews.com. It's all one word, naturalnews.com. I'm not able to send that, I'm not able to post it, not able to make a comment with naturalnews.com in it, and I'm not allowed to send it on Messenger. Now that is censorship, folks. And also, my next post is media is quiet about Ardern's loss of numerous High Court cases over the border policy that were ruled. Now I would say I've had only 14 likes for that, a couple of comments, that will be shadow banned. The only people that will be seeing that will be people that will go to, they won't see it on their news feed. They'll have to go to my Facebook page and scroll down to see those sorts of things. And so, you know, that's, that will be one. Anything that brings the government, especially Ardern, into a negative light, now it will be Chris Hipkins, because he's the new whipping boy. So my point is this: the media is quiet about Ardern's loss of numerous high court cases over the border policy that were ruled unlawful. Remember that during the lockdowns, they stopped people coming in. They were New Zealanders, stopped them coming in. People that were pregnant couldn't get home to have their babies, and those babies are now they are not New Zealand citizens because they weren't born in New Zealand. So that's going to be difficult, isn't it? So the judges have ruled them unlawful. The independent investigation by the Ombudsman in December ruled that the conduct of her staff and the content of her policies were dishonourable. So have a look at that. So that's the notice of Jacinda Ardern's kindness. It's completely ridiculous. And then the real reason why they want you to hate Donald Trump. Have a look at that. That is absolutely brilliant. And that's why the 2020 US elections were rigged, because they cannot have Trump in, because he's not a globalist.
Everyone's in on the Great Reset. Well, almost everyone. There's one guy who's got the power to do something to stop it, and you know exactly where I'm going. And they made a mistake. They tried to get Trump on their side, so they invited Donald Trump to Davos, I think a couple of times. But in January, when Donald Trump, I think, really began to see the beast that he was up against, he went to Davos, to the World Economic Forum, and he stuck a MAGA finger in their eye.
We're committed to conserving the majesty of God's creation and the natural beauty of our world. But to embrace the possibilities of tomorrow, we must reject the perennial prophets of doom and their predictions of the apocalypse. These alarmists always demand the same thing: absolute power to dominate, transform, and control every aspect of our lives. We will never let radical socialists destroy our economy, wreck our country.
2 days after Donald Trump gave that speech, the 89-year-old leftist weirdo billionaire George Soros made an emergency intervention where, at Davos, once again, warning that the U.S. 2020 election will determine the, quote, fate of the whole world. Now, in the context of Davos, take a look at this one more time. This is a month after Donald Trump addressed Davos and stuck the MAGA finger in their face. Here's what Francis, the Vatican, and Jeffrey Sachs had to say in response.
And it is a dangerous country right now. It will be absolutely dangerous if Trump wins re-election. Trump wins re-election. Trump wins re-election.
Francis invited this guy to the Amazon Senate as an honored guest and advisor. He's also Bernie Sanders' advisor. What's he doing in the Vatican? Why is this guy, who is a promoter for socialist, out and out socialist, Bernie Sanders, what's he doing advising the Pope? Why does he have entree to the Vatican, friends? Sachs supports abortion and contraception, but that's not a problem for the Vatican. For the Vatican, for Pope Francis, and for his friends at the UN, Donald Trump is the problem, obviously, friends.
Clearly, I consider the Trump administration a danger to the world, but I regard it as a purely temporary phenomenon that will disappear in 2020.
Do you get it? Do you see why there's so much hate for Trump? Because with all of his faults, again, he's the capitalist. He's not the globalist. He never will be one of them, which is why he pulled the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement. Donald Trump pulled the United States out of the World Health Organization. That's Bill Gates and company. And now he's threatening to pull the United States out of the World Trade Organization. People say, yeah, well, Donald Trump got married twice. He's a bad guy. Really? He's right in the face of the demons on this, friends. Nobody ever said he was a saint. He's knocking the sacred cows of the United Nations down all over the world right now.
The General Assembly routinely votes 185 against the United States on almost everything right now.
And you remember, speaking of the United Nations, in November of 2019, again, right before COVID landed, Trump went to the UN on the floor of the General Assembly, and he declared war on globalism.
Wise leaders always put the good of their own people and their own country first. The future does not belong to globalists. The future belongs to patriots.
And shortly after the speech at the UN, Donald Trump delivered, what do you think happened? The coronavirus was unleashed on the world, and Trump's booming U.S. economy went on life support. Do you think that was an accident? So when they tell you, when they tell all of us to stay home, wear your mask so grandma doesn't get sick, please understand what's really going on here. They don't care about your grandmother. They don't care about old people, these people. They don't care about babies. They want them aborted so that they can save the common home. Abort babies, millions of them all over the world. They don't care about babies. They don't care about old people. In fact, if you want to save your grandma, tell the globalists to stay the hell away from her. You remember how some of them, like Cuomo and characters like this, were running COVID recovering patients through nursing homes? That's how much they care about grandma. And the name of the game now is to bring the United States economy to its knees, get it out of the way, so that everyone will want the Great Reset. Make the new normal so intolerably abnormal that even you and I, maybe, you know, at some point in the near future, we'll be begging for the vaccines because we'll be driven crazy by that point. Begging for whatever else is going to keep us safe according to our jailers and our handlers and our zookeepers, you see? That's what they want. That's why they keep using this term, new normal. You know what we do to fight back? Go to work. Go back to school. If you're healthy, take off the mask. And for heaven's sake, go back to church and pray that Trump wins in November. That's what the reset was. That's what the Russia hoax was all about. That's what the impeachment hoax was all about, don't you see? For 4 years, I've been trying to stop this man, because if he strengthens America, if he makes it great again, if he brings the economy back again, the reset won't happen. The New World Order is going to be set way back. Who knows when they're going to have another COVID opportunity like this one again, and they know it. So ask yourselves why they hate this man. These folks, these men, they hate God. They hate the unborn. They hate the traditional family. They hate you. And they hate Donald Trump.
We will have a globalist leader. Our next leader, Hipkins, is a globalist. Ardern is a globalist. Luxon is a globalist. And so is Seymour. And I don't know about Winston Peters. I would say that he would be. Didn't he sign us up to some so-called non-binding, which is absolute rubbish, PPTA or some funny thing, Trans-Pacific Partnership. Well, that's globalist. That's a globalist thing. You know, they give it all these different names, but basically you're signing yourself up to a global world government. That's what you're doing. Instead of looking after the nation state, we don't need to be part of some global government to trade internationally. We can trade very well. People want our stuff. They want our land. They want our wool and all our other wonderful products. They want them. We're a very, very clever little country. We don't need to be part of some global economy to do that. We can trade internationally. Just get out there and get working. And then I also write something here. The religious side of my Facebook page. That's quite interesting about the Bible. 2 Timothy 3:16 says that all scripture is given by inspiration. Now we have to sort of ask ourselves, well, what is scripture? Is it the Bible we hold in our hands, or is it the autographs? Is it the originals? And if it is the originals, well, how can you study the originals? You can't. So the word script, when it says scripture, all scripture is given by inspiration. People like to say, oh, well, no, there's no perfect Bibles. King James Bible, that's nonsense. Written by King James, which is nonsense. And so the only way you can have a perfect Bible is you need to look at the original Greek. And they often say the original Greek says. And how could they say the original Greek says when they've never seen the original Greek? They wouldn't know a copy. They wouldn't even know what the autographs look like if they fell over it. It's not going to have written on it autographs or the, you know, originals. These are the originals. And you know what? Bart Ehrman, who's now completely lost his faith, but he was one of the top textual critics. Him and Theodore Letus, another one who's sadly passed away from a roading accident, actually. A logging truck hit him back in 2005. Poor old Theodore. Wonderful man. For the received text, he said, "There's no." Both Bart and him said that there is no evidential foundation that the New Testament autographs were written in Greek. Get that? And yet all these Christians are running around saying the original Greek says. And then I say, well, what original? There's about 24 different types of text. 24. So which one? Which one is your final authority? So, you know, don't come at me and say the original says, because I'm going to, you know, when I'm going to rebuke you for it. I'm going to get you to tell me, well, what do you mean? Show me the evidence of the original. And why are you saying the original says? And why is the original that you, this mysterious original that you can't get your hands on, why are you wanting to hold that up? You're doing it because you're disingenuous, because you know that we haven't got the original, and you're just, how can you say the original says? You've never seen it. It's just, it would never stand up in a court of law. So it's, you know, that gets me hot under the collar. And then Ardern, my next post is Ardern has asked how she would like New Zealanders to remember her leadership, and she said, as someone who has always tried to be kind.
I leave behind a belief that you can be kind but strong, empathetic but decisive, optimistic but focused, that you can be your own kind of leader, one that knows when it's time to go.
And then my next post is mRNA Dr. Robert Malone calls out governors working with the globalists.
They are coming from a belief system that says that nation state is an obsolete idea, and we have to have a one world government that is basically a fusion of the interests of corporations and politics, global politics. And we got to start by finding out who they are, voting them out of office, making sure they are not part of our governments. Two notable characters here in the United States are Governors Inslee and Newsom. Okay? We've got to out these people. We've got to force them to account for whether or not they're Americans or are they globalists. And if they're globalists, they got to get out. We got to get rid of them. We got to take back ownership of our country. If you believe in the Constitution, if you believe in the principles of free speech and personal autonomy, medical autonomy and autonomy at every level, other level, it's time to fight. You know, or your children are going to live in basically a techno-fascism for the rest of their natural lives as serfs.
I call out all politicians, bureaucrats, and corporation leaders like Television New Zealand. I call them out. They are working with the globalists, and they've got to be told, given an ultimatum, you're either going to be a globalist or you're a New Zealander. You either stand up for the nation state and New Zealanders, or you can follow a global foreign power. And that is treason. And so we're not going to have a bar of you. We're going to vote you out of office. And this is what Malone says. We're going to vote you out of office. And we need to identify who you are. And we're going to do that. We've got lists. We know who you globalists are. We're going to identify who you are. And we are going to expose you. And we're going to warn the New Zealand public. We've got ways of doing this. And just because you think you've got all the media all tied up, you ain't seen nothing yet. And so this year is going to be a year of exposing the globalists. Luxon, we know what you are. We know what you are, Seymour. You know, so you boys, we're not going to let up. So, you know, Jacinda couldn't handle it. She had a nervous breakdown. And we hope that a few more of you globalists will be having nervous breakdowns and throwing the towel in, because we're on your case. The next one down, oh, there we go. So this was yesterday, Thursday, when she resigned. This was at about 1 o'clock. She resigned due to mental breakdown. That's exactly right. That's what it boils down to, folks. She didn't resign because there's something new coming up in the future. She didn't resign because she knew she couldn't win the election. She would probably go through and do her best if she hadn't had a nervous breakdown. She is mentally unwell, according to Ed Dutton and others, and you just got to look at some of the things she does, and some of the way she acts. I mean, you wouldn't see, you know, what world leaders would go and put a hijab on and walk around with a hijab on when if some Muslims have been shot up in a mosque in New Zealand. That was just, it's mentally ill. And going on about being kind, you know, we need someone to be good, as Shane Chaffin would say. We need a good prime minister, not a kind one. Because sometimes you have to be cruel to be kind. And you were not kind at all. You were cruel and pretended you were kind. So we're glad you're gone. We're I'm pleased you've had a nervous breakdown. I think the Lord has given it to you because you know that you're responsible for the deaths and maiming of hundreds of New Zealanders being killed, hundreds that the government has covered up and the mainstream media have covered up and the reporting system. We know that the reporting system only shows about 5%, and we know that doctors were reluctant to say that it was a COVID bad reaction from the vaccine. They don't want to get involved. They didn't want to know. And they're just people aren't, as a result, people that are vaccine injured. It's not a vaccine. It's a gene therapy. It's wickedness in high places. And you're just poisoning people with your toxins. And, you know, no wonder you've had a nervous breakdown. So, you know, probably that means there is a little skerrick of humanity left in you, Miss Ardern. You know, you disgust me. And that you went on so long, all of you are responsible for murder, and all of you should stand trial and be sentenced for genocide. And we need to start talking about what the punishment for genocide will be. John Ansell did a very good podcast on that and started speaking about that and spoke about that publicly to a little weasel wimp, the chief whip for Labour. McInulty, I think his name is. Oh, it's Hamish or something. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, not Hamish, but you know who I mean. And then he got all fretty, tried to make himself out to be a victim. Ansell was only asking him, "What should the? We know that you're killing people, and you know you are. You know that this shouldn't be going on. You know you should stop that vaccine straight away, but you're going ahead with it because there's money involved in it for you all, and we need to get you to start thinking about what the punishment should be for genocide. What should the punishment be?" And he got all sort of funny, and now he's probably got about 20 bodyguards. We know that Jacinda had 20 bodyguards when Helen Clark, who was the most hated woman in New Zealand when she was in Prime Minister because of her communistic globalist ways, she had 2 bodyguards. And now we know, we've heard from Matt King, he said this, he's a former police officer, former member of parliament, and he told us that she has over 20, and he knows a lot of them. So she has over 20 bodyguards. So you can imagine that the little weasel that's taken over from the mental patient, Chris Hipkins, her flatmate in the UK, by the way, they were flatties, probably did a bit of dope together or a bit of whatever else, a few druggies. Yeah, they love the drugs and they love the sex too, those weirdo lefties. So so he is now, he'll have extra bodyguards, no doubt, because we need to make sure that they need to live in fear. And in America, the founding fathers, politicians should live in fear of the people. That is in a democracy. And what happens in a draconian tyrant rulers, what would you call it? Oh, the word escapes me. Never mind. Anyway, we fear the government, and we should never fear the government in a democracy. But here we are living in a pretending to be a democracy, and we're fearing the government of what they're going to do to us next. And it shouldn't be that way. The government should always fear the people, and they should be terrified of us. And they're not, and they should be, and because they need to be held accountable for these deaths and for the maiming of New Zealanders with that dreaded toxin that they pumped into people, coerced people, and basically forced people. You can call it coercion, but it's worse than that. It's forced them, because if you can't feed your family because you haven't got a vaccine jab or an mRNA gene therapy jab in your arm, that is you're forcing the man of the house to get he can't go to work and earn money unless he's been vaccinated and been shot up with a toxin. Many people have died and they're not owning up to it. Many doctors have left or taken early retirement. Many nurses have left. Even people that are pharmacists know what's going on and they're not happy about it. They're starting to slowly wake up. But, you know, shame on all of you that know what's going on and yet you continue on in the industry without speaking up. A friend of mine has a cardiologist in Wellington. He said he has seen a lot. And the reason why this came up was because my friend said he's old, he's in his 80s, and he didn't want to take the vaccine because he'd heard that it might not be good, you know, can cause myocarditis and pericarditis. And his doctor, his GP, was forcing him, you know, come on, you've got to get it. You need to get it. And he said, no, I'm not going to. I'm not going to. Thank goodness he didn't, because, you know, he might not be with us now. He's still with us. Anyway, his cardiologist said, well, to tell you the truth, I wouldn't recommend you do get it. He said, I am inundated with young people with myocarditis and pericarditis. I have never seen anything like it, and I can't afford to say anything, to speak out, because I have people that are my patients that need me to keep them alive. He's a cardiologist. And so that's his excuse. But really, he should have come out and he should have said, I am a cardiologist, and I have an inordinate number of young people, children, coming to me that have been vaccinated, and they've had they now have a heart problem. And that is disgraceful. That cardiologist in Wellington is a despicable human being for not speaking out. And I'm going to bring this up with Dr. Elena Ratner, who is a great doctor, one of the great doctors, along with a lot of the others. Wozniak, I think his name is. I can never pronounce his name properly, but all the team at New Zealand Doctor Speaking Out with Science. Don't go to nzdsos.co.nz. It's a government shrill site. Go, make sure you go to nzdsos.com, and then you'll get the truth. Okay, well, so that's me for the time being. I just thought I'd give you a bit of an update. Oh, we'll just check and see. I got a bit sidetracked there talking about the doctors. It really gets my blood boiling. So we've had Greta. We've got her going there. She's going. Media's quiet. Yeah, they are very quiet about all the court cases that Labor has lost over the lockdowns. And isn't it interesting that the independent investigation by the Ombudsman in December ruled that the conduct of her staff was and the content of her policies were dishonourable.
One man who knows very well of the hardships Ardern's policies have caused is my next guest, lawyer Tudor Klee. Tudor, thank you so much for joining me. Ardern is often presented as a progressive and kind champion of women. But you've said that her government's policies contributed to the grossest abuse of women's reproductive rights in a generation. Explain to my audience what happened to some of the women you represent.
Yes, well, essentially, when the border was shut during the COVID lockdown, the government put in place an exemption program, for instance, so that people with a medical condition overseas could find a way back to New Zealand for help. When they set it up, it explicitly excluded pregnancy and childbirth. Mm. So as a result of that, we had many women and families who were split, and they couldn't even come back to their own country to give birth safely. That obviously had an enormous impact on many women who were sitting at home in New Zealand during a lockdown where it was illegal to even have their family come and help them with the baby. The husband or the father was stuck overseas. And vice versa, women who wanted to come back and give birth with support and instead were in countries that had inadequate medical facilities. And in some cases, it was even illegal for them to be pregnant and unmarried in the countries they were in. And all of their applications were rejected.
And I know one woman you represented was in Afghanistan, somewhere where she was certainly not going to get the sort of medical care she would receive in New Zealand. And it's not just the birth that's impacted here. This affects the citizenship of their children and their children's children.
Yes. Well, last month I was in an interview and I raised the issue that under New Zealand law, every single one of the babies that is born overseas does not have the ability to pass on citizenship to their own children in the future automatically. And in fact, some of the children born overseas, even if they have a New Zealand citizen parent, may not even be New Zealand citizens at all now.
Oh, I mean, that is just... locking down the entire country over a single case. How do New Zealanders see her now? Is the slump in her poll numbers due to COVID policies or the state of the economy and the broken promises? How has she perceived, and really what's been behind her plunge in popularity?
Well, the interesting thing was she had already lost numerous human rights cases at the High Court. Her border policy was ruled unlawful for stopping New Zealanders coming back against our Bill of Rights. She's lost multiple pregnancy cases at the High Court. But I think the final straw was the independent investigator, the ombudsman, ruling just in December that essentially the conduct of her staff and the conduct of her policies in effectively banning pregnant women coming back and many other people in difficult situations was essentially dishonourable and that she should apologise. And it put her in a position where in Parliament just before Christmas, she made it clear she would not apologise for any of her border policies in spite of the people that her own watchdog had clearly said she'd harmed.
Incredible. Just lastly, what do you see as her legacy?
Well, I think the legacy will be one of cruelty. The notion of the kindness is completely ridiculous to anyone who has an understanding of what she did. I mean, ultimately, when we're talking about things like the pregnant women who were forced to be born overseas are now finding out their children's citizenship is irreparably damaged because of this policy, we have to remember that the border was open if you were wealthy or you're an entertainer or a sports person. So when I was fighting pregnancy cases pro bono for 35 families to come back, Jacinda Ardern's policy allowed 64 foreign DJs to fly into New Zealand to make millions of dollars out of us, while simultaneously forcing these women into incredibly stressful and difficult situations. It was a callous disregard for their rights and the rights of their children. And what I'm interested in is that the story of the citizenship, which is an enormous scandal in itself, was due to break next week. And the government had already been asked to comment on it. And I have a feeling that Jacinda Ardern saw this as something she couldn't come back from, because these children's citizenship is irreparably damaged. And I just don't see how she could have gone through next week as the Prime Minister having to answer questions about that and try to continue to not apologise for what her policy did.
Yes, quite a legacy for someone who's presented by the world's media as a champion of women. Judah Klee, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
But the media are quiet about it. Well, of course they're quiet because, you know, they're being paid, well, they got $54 million and then they got a whole lot more after that. And also I love the real reason why Donald Trump, why they didn't want him in, was his speech at the World Economic Forum. I think it was in 2020, before the election. So sometime there, when he was president, he went to Davos and he gave a speech and he basically told them to get knotted, that we are going to be a national, we're put America first and we're not, this is not, globalism has no future in America. Now, the other thing that the media here in New Zealand have been very quiet about is that the therapeutic products bill, it's something we need to be jumping up and down about. The government is having another crack at controlling what we eat and drink with their newly introduced therapeutic products bill. Now, Dr. Guy Hatchard from HatchardReport.com has a brilliant video out explaining the government's draconian new plans for our health and well-being. So what about the homeopathic remedies? You know, I'm thinking, so they're all well below Avogadro's number, so, you know, there's no molecule in them. Will they be regulated too? I guess they will, because they've come for the water, haven't they, with the three waters or five waters or however many waters you think it is. That's an absolute coup where the government has stolen utilities off the ratepayers in various regions of New Zealand. Absolutely terrible. But that's all part of Agenda 21. They have to control the utilities, so they can turn it on and off at will and poison you as well with fluoride, which is very, very dangerous. You'd never put fluoride in the water or any of the other stuff they put in as well. So while I'm on the subject, you know, will there be a Maori Therapeutic Products Committee like the Maori Plant Variety Rights Committee? Did you know that? That was introduced last year I probably will look at that. But make sure you go and have a look at the new bill that's come out, the therapeutic products bill. You know, things like Nux Vomica and Belladonna, which are homeopathic remedies, they'll be banned. 50% of New Zealanders use use homeopathy, arnica and things like that, accident relief, all used all the time, a lot of sports people. In the farming industry, a lot of farmers that are in the dairy industry, they use homeopathic remedies because they can prophylactically treat their cows and they don't end up getting mastitis. And then if they do get mastitis, they can treat the cow with it, and within a day or two, they're able to put the cow back on and into production. When they give it antibiotics, they're not able to milk that cow because the antibiotics in the milk. And so there you go. And then another post that I did here back on Thursday, over the last few years, the New Zealand government have introduced some of the most draconian restrictions on the public, and the trend has not stopped. It's just because the pandemic lockdown stopped. Ardern, well now it's Hipkins, and her cronies are intent on setting the standard for authoritarian control and government micromanagement. And a series of recent laws are driving home the reality that they do not intend to relent, and they're not going to do that. And so zerohedge.com, I've got the link there on my Facebook page. Make sure you have a look at that. The energy crisis, food crisis, industrial collapse, supply chain disruptions, fractured communications, cyber attacks, blackouts, hyperinflation, climate change, wars, civil conflicts, and more pandemics culminating in human misery. It's all manufactured. We know that. We know that. So go and have a look at globalresearch.ca, the big lie, the world energy shortage, and fourth industrial revolution. Have a look at that. And then also last week on the 18th, the FAA, that's the Federal Aviation Authority, they have been caught covering up pilot heart damage. And so I did a podcast on that. So if you zoop down, you can actually hear that podcast, the FAA cover up pilot heart damage. And also, just on a personal note, I did start the Lion Diet. That's the one that Michaela Peterson has been talking about. I think she's been on this meat-only diet. She calls it it's called a lion diet, but elimination diet. So what you're doing is that you're eliminating everything except for meat, and you just red meat, no pork, no well, even though pork is red meat, but for some reason no pork, just beef, bison. She has lamb, and no chicken, because I think chicken, you know, the chickens we buy, you know, lots of drugs in them. But it's all organic, got to be organic, and it's just meat, and it's quite expensive to do it. But she had arthritis as a child, very, very bad. And so since she's gone on this lion diet, this all meat diet, it's all gone away. And so she loves it. She loves meat. She probably, you know, I mean, I tried it for about a week and I felt amazing. I felt alive and my brain was working better, you know, because I'm probably half dyslexic or something, or fully dyslexic. I struggle a bit with reading, always have, even when I was in radio, I had to work a lot harder than the others at sight reading. I don't know why. I felt that it happened from the childhood vaccines. I felt that something happened to me when I was around about 3 or 4. I can actually remember that I wasn't able to think as clearly. I remember being able to like think things through and ask lots of amazing questions. And then my parents said all of a sudden I just sort of stopped asking questions after I had that final some shot of some vaccines. So anyway, Michaela Peterson, that's Jordan Peterson's daughter.
Hey there, I'm Michaela Peterson. Welcome to my channel. I'm coming up on 5 years on the Lion Diet. Can you believe that? 5 years of only eating beef, lamb, bison, salt and water with the occasional vodka/bourbon. I'll get into that later. As many of you guys know, I came across this diet out of desperation when I had come off of psychiatric medications trying to get my depression under control and my juvenile idiopathic arthritis that left me with a hip and ankle replacement at 17 under control because the medical system was not doing it for me. So I stopped taking all my medication after I went on the the paleo diet when I was 23. Very restrictive paleo diet. No nuts, dairy, eggs, very limited fruit, mostly meat and greens. That got rid of all my symptoms until I came off of psychiatric medications way too quickly. I cold turkey, stopped taking antidepressants after being medicated from the age of 12 to 23. That was horrific. I didn't even know I was an antidepressant withdrawal for a number of years until my dad experienced the same thing. And that's what led me to the Lion diet. And I've been on the Lion diet since December 2017 to keep my autoimmune disorder under control. In remission, I do not take any medication and I have no arthritic symptoms. And to keep my psychiatric conditions in remission, because I was extremely, extremely, extremely depressed. I had OCD symptoms, was diagnosed with bipolar, and I was on a lot of different medications, and I was absolutely miserable. And I'm medication-free, no longer an antidepressant withdrawal, and I attribute almost all of my success to the Lion diet. So if people are interested in it, I have a ton of free information up at liondiet.com. I have recipes. You can kind of look into my blog to see how I got to where I am now. I have an FAQ, a very extensive FAQ on there to help people start the diet. I also have a couple of Facebook groups, Don't Eat That, for kind of elimination diets, health-minded people, and the Lion diet for people who are specifically on this diet, who need a group of people who aren't going to judge them while they're doing all beef, all lamb, all bison, which can elicit some strange stares and remarks.
Don't let anyone tell you you can't fix yourself. Yes, you certainly can. And Dr. Sam Bailey has a book out that's been republished by Sam and Mark Bailey.
We are very pleased to announce the release of a new book, Terrain Therapy. This has been months in the making and brings back to life the important writings of Dr. Ulrich Williams. For us personally, it has been one of the most important factors shaping our understanding of health and the fundamental errors of the medical system. If there is one book that I always come back to, it's this one. My guidebook to health, life, and spirituality. For those of you that don't want to wait until the end of this video to find out how to secure your own copy, you can head to drsambailey.com/terraintherapy right now to see the different options. In the meantime, to give you an idea of what this book is all about, I'll read my foreword for this treasure trove of health wisdom. Terrain Therapy Foreword by Dr. Samantha Bailey. I first discovered Dr. Ulrich Williams, 1819-1971, in 2021. A dear friend, Simon Williams, whose husband is distantly related to Dr. Williams, sent me a copy of New Zealand's greatest doctor, Ulrich Williams of Whanganui, a surgeon who became a naturopath. The booklet was published in 1998 by Brenda Sampson, who had been a former patient of Dr. Williams in the 1940s. Simon met the 83-year-old Brenda in 2000 and described her as a picture of health, so bright-eyed and sharp in mind, a tall and beautiful lady, and very straight up, both physically and in her manner. However, Brenda never mentioned her publication during that meeting, and it was not until several years later that Simon came across a copy of New Zealand's Greatest Doctor and made the connection. The book instantly struck a chord with me on a number of levels. The first was how concise Dr. Williams was with his explanations of health and disease. For example, he would say, all disease comes from one of two places, either an unhealthy way of life, or else it comes from unhappiness in the mind and spirit. This was in striking contrast to my allopathic medical training, where I was bombarded with the names of hundreds of diseases, many of which appeared to be able to strike unsuspecting victims at will. For most of these disease entities, the allopathic system postulates a single cause and a specific treatment protocol. Dr. Williams saw the folly of treating people this way. There are no specific entities as such. There are only the manifested symptoms and conditions of the body. He did not believe in germ theory and Louis Pasteur's claims. Instead, Dr. Williams lent his support to the terrain theorist Antoine Bichamp and stated, it isn't the germs that matter, but that upon which they prey. Dr. Williams placed a great deal of importance on the psychological and spiritual realms. He was clear that a healthy body was ultimately dependent on a healthy mind and a resolute connection on the spiritual plane. Deficiencies in this department were not only detrimental to health, but sometimes fatal. As he would explain, If a person is very unhappy and can't find a way out of the unhappiness, the body will create a way out through illness. Dr. Williams had no hubris when it came to the abilities of doctors and once said to Brenda Sampson, "I didn't cure you, only God can heal. Actually, what I did was to teach you how to cure yourself, and that will be useful to you all your life." He had not always been that way. Earlier in his career, the dashing obstetrician surgeon had a reputation of being a playboy doctor, more interested in sports, women, and booze than his patients. As one friend put it, he would rush them through the surgery, filling them up with sedatives and drugs just as quickly as he could, so that he might have more time for his pleasures. However, Dr. Williams reached a crisis point in 1931 and became horrified with the allopathic remedies that he had been dispensing for material profits. He knew it was time to find a new path, and over the next few years gradually worked out his basis for healthy living, right eating, right thinking, and right living, with an appreciation of the relationship between body, mind, and spirit. He became appalled at the number of operations being done and resolved to do no more surgery. He made detailed studies on the processing of food, the health and methods of fertilization of the soil, diet and psychology. He concluded that the excessive use of chemical pesticides and fertilizers were endangering human health. In this regard, he was years ahead of even Rachel Carson, who blew the whistle on DDT and other environmental chemical contaminants in the 1960s. In New Zealand's Greatest Doctor, Brenda Sampson mentioned some of Dr. Williams' publications, but they had all been out of print for many years. After an extensive search, I managed to purchase a 1939 fourth edition of Hints on Healthy Living from a Wellington bookshop. The book was another great revelation, and I was unable to put it down. His sentences can appear simple, and yet they are often powerful aphorisms. For example, "Don't fight disease, but practice good health," is one of my guiding principles. Dr. Williams published the 83-page first edition of Hints on Healthy Living in 1934. By the fourth edition, the one I hold, it had reached 300 pages, with well over 100 of the pages comprising recipes. There was a fifth edition of the book in 1949, which came with the new title, Health and Healing in the New Age. A copy of this can be found in the National Library of New Zealand. It can get confusing when book titles are changed in this way, but it was probably more fitting than a title that suggested it contained merely hints. Although Dr. Williams had humbly written in the 1930s that the scope of this book is indicated in its title, it is certainly instructive enough to provide the reader with a comprehensive way of living and a profound understanding of health. When we decided to put this book into print, consideration was given as to whether to modernize the format and style. Dr. Williams favoured a great deal of capitalisation in his writing, which may seem unusual in the present day, as he appears to be shouting at his readers. However, on reflection, we elected to maintain his literary style. If he was concerned about unhealthy lifestyles in the 1930s, it is almost certain that he would be shouting at us even more loudly in the 2020s. There is also a personal delight in allowing a buried voice to have a platform over 80 years later. By leaving the style as it was, Dr. Williams gets to speak again in his unique style, while his detractors are long since forgotten. The truth has a habit of surfacing, even if it takes time. While preserving most of his original content, there have been some updates to help the modern reader. Some of Dr. Williams' classifications and lists have been reorganized to make them clearer. Where more accurate and important information is now available, it has been added. What is most remarkable is how little needed changing, such is his timeless wisdom. His examples of 1930s medical follies have been left in place, as they are illustrative of many of the same erroneous health models that are still blindly followed today. The laws of God and the nature of biology cannot be changed by man. Dr. Williams' genius was in the distillation and communication of these principles to others. There are a large number of recipes in this book, which is appropriate given the emphasis that Dr. Williams placed on achieving health through diet. They are simple to follow, nourishing, and practical, with the vital themes being readily apparent. Our diet should consist of foods that are provided by nature, with the avoidance of processes that deplete their nutritional value. By simply browsing through the recipes, you will see plenty of fruits and vegetables and unadulterated ingredients. It goes without saying that knowing where your food comes from is of the utmost importance. Dr. Williams was not averse to meat in the diet, although he would advise restricting the consumption during times of illness. There are no meat dishes amongst the recipes, apart from the unexpected appearance of one savoury rabbit in the meat substitute section. Our family consumes meat regularly, and I am happy to leave others to work out their best balance. Raw milk and butter, however, are frequently employed in the recipes. If flour is being used, it should usually be wholemeal, while sweetening is achieved through raw sugar or honey. Puddings can be part of a healthy diet if they consist of such wholesome ingredients. One of my favourite recipes in this book is Welsh nectar, a natural homemade soft drink with a delicious mouthfeel that cannot be replicated by commercial varieties. For readers outside the United Kingdom and Australasia, there may be a few unfamiliar terms. Marmite and Vegemite are potent food spreads made from yeast extract. They are jet black in colour and rich sources of vitamin B compounds. Weet-Bix is a popular breakfast cereal in Australasia, with a similar product in the UK and North America being Weetabix. Granose flakes are now known as corn flakes, so this was updated in the recipe section. There are a few other old words that have been preserved to remind us of our heritage. Recipe measurements are mostly in the imperial system and brief on instructions. The idea is more about appreciating the principle of natural ingredients and eating minimally manipulated food. During his practicing career, Dr. Williams gave many popular public lectures and wrote to newspapers frequently. He campaigned against fluoridation of water supplies and was opposed to all vaccines, which he described as disgusting and disease-producing. Such positions brought him into conflict with the British Medical Association, who expelled him as a member in 1936. Subsequently, a similarly outraged medical council failed in their attempts to have him struck off the register in the 1940s. This resonated with me due to the medical council's attempts to silence me after I went public in 2020 with regard to the COVID-19 fraud. However, unlike Dr. Williams, I had no desire to remain practicing within the medical system once I understood its nature. Last century, Dr. Williams wrote that the modern medical system, to the extent of perhaps 80%, is nothing but a gigantic, cruel, ludicrous, lucrative, transparent fraud. If you would like to get a copy of Terrain Therapy, then there are a number of options at drsambailey.com/terraintherapy.
So that is a book that I think I want to buy, and so I'll be looking forward to getting that. So go to drsambailey.com and check her out. She's brilliant. She was on YouTube. She's still on YouTube, but she can't say all that she wants to say on YouTube. She uses YouTube as a teaser to take you to Odyssey. So, well, thank you for joining me as we scroll down my Facebook posts over the last few weeks. And I've got someone laughing at me. Ellen is laughing, and Margaret and Louise, what are they laughing? Oh, that's with me. Asked how she, Ardern, would like New Zealanders to remember her leadership, Ardern said, as someone who always tried to be kind. And I've got a little man there vomiting green vomit. So that's good. Usually when people laugh at me, they're not laughing with me, they're laughing at me. Okay, so there we have it. Oh, and here's an interesting dilemma. This is very, very interesting. Teddy Caldwell put me onto this. He said that I heard about a woman who shot and killed her terminally ill husband. I hope she doesn't get any charges. And I thought about that for a while. And Teddy is a Christian. Georgia, I think he is. No, he lives in Topeka, Kansas. But he's from Georgia. And Teddy, and I sort of said to him, well, I don't think that is right, what she did. And I said that she needs to be put in jail. And God giveth and taketh away life, not a man's wife. And so Teddy came back to me and he said, I don't think what she did is right, but I understand her position. And I said, well, it's still murder. I said, remember the man that killed King Saul because Saul asked him to, and David had that man put to death, even though he thought that it was a mercy killing. And Teddy said, yeah, no, that is a good point. So it's very easy for us to be swayed by the world. And really, the only way we can know really what is right and what is wrong, and that is to look in our King James Bible, isn't it? To look in that old book that granddad had and great-granddad, that's the one that sailed all over the British Empire, the mighty imperial empire. Every ship that sailed had a King James Bible in it. And I'm just going to pop outside and get my washing in before I lose it. My lovely milking sheep. Hello, girls. Hello, girls. You all right? Good on you. Keep eating. That's the one. I'll milk you one day. In the meantime, they're just feeding their babies. But soon I will. I don't want to be buying milk, especially if they say that they're going to be putting mRNA vaccines in the milk. I don't want that. So this is Grant Edwards for Liberty NZ. Going through some of my Facebook posts. Hope you'll go to my page, have a look and see, because I know that it's all censored, but I use it as a diary so that I can remember things and so that I can scroll down and see what I've written. And that's my little diary. Another thing that I've been using for a diary, because I don't want to pay Bill Gates all that money, you know, I don't want to pay Microsoft for Word and Office and all that. It costs a fortune. But I have been using, I don't know how long this will be free for, but if you go into Gmail, and then you click on those 9 dots at the top right, just next to your little photo there. It has all these other little apps, and you've got spreadsheets, you know, spreadsheets, Word documents. It's quite good. It holds it all in the cloud, and you don't have to save it. It saves automatically. You can access it anywhere. It's quite handy to have something like that. They certainly make it easy. Probably I should be with Mega, not with Google. I know I've got to get out of there. My website now, my email now for anyone that wants to contact me is libertynz, libertynz@yandex.com. That's spelt Y-A-N-D-E-X. So that's Yankee Alpha November Delta Echo X-ray.com. Grant Edwards signing off. See you next time.